Catch up on all the best David Glenn Show interviews at accsports.com/David Glenn.
So last week, the NCAA hit Notre Dame with sanctions that were more severe than some NCAA compliance experts had expected. And it has raised not only complaints from Notre Dame personnel and fans, it has raised the question, are there any parallels that might apply now that we've seen what the Committee on Infractions has done to Notre Dame under a completely different set of facts? Is there anything to be taken away as it might apply in the coming months to the UNC case, which also involves academic wrongdoing? It's important to remind everybody that these two cases are far more different than they are alike. So drawing too many parallels or conclusions, in my opinion, as someone who's closely followed NCAA compliance issues for 30 years as part of my sports media career, I think it would be a mistake to try to draw too many conclusions. But I would encourage you to think more broadly in these ways as we continue to play what is nothing more than an educated guessing game moving forward. The concern for Carolina fans, I would boil down to this. What the NCAA Committee on Infractions did to Notre Dame showcased a willingness to take sanctions into new and unprecedented territory. And that certainly doesn't sound good for any defendant, UNC, Notre Dame, or anybody else. I believe that what the NCAA did here was on the severe end of the gray area where they could have come down on the Fighting Irish. And that's not what UNC or UNC fans want to hear. Here's what I mean. The NCAA ordered Notre Dame to vacate all of the victories from their 2012 and 2013 football seasons because of this academic misconduct case. Now, they also had other sanctions, including a small fine, a year of probation, a public reprimand. Everybody knew those other sanctions were coming. Just like some versions of those things, fine, probation, reprimand, are very likely to happen to the Tar Heels as well. But the vacation of victories, or as you hear the ABC crowd call for it, the vacation of championship or victories, right, is a much more severe sanction and one that Notre Dame objects to and has already appealed, as is allowed under NCAA rules. What I mean by the Committee on Infractions going on the severe end of the gray area is this. I don't want to get too far into the legalese, but here's one way to put it. Generally speaking, in the past, and I can't think of a single precedent for exactly what just happened to Notre Dame, but here's a general rule of thumb without getting into the nitty-gritty. When there have been academic misconduct cases in the past in front of the NCAA Committee on Infractions, the only times I have ever seen the NCAA utilize that severe vacation of victories penalty as part of the sanctions is in circumstances where either the university was found to have a lack of institutional control or the university was found to have a failure to monitor a coach or an academic supervisor like Jim Boeheim's right-hand man at Syracuse. Those cases we see all the time. When the actions involve serious institutional misconduct, a coach like in the Minnesota academic scandal of years ago, or the coach's secretary who reports to him, of course. That's an institutional member being central to the academic fraud. Jim Boeheim's right-hand man, the Minnesota basketball coach back in the day. Sometimes there's even an academic tutor who is hired by the university and supervised within the athletic department umbrella. That sounds a lot closer to an institutional staff member. In the case at Notre Dame, the person central to the fraud was simply a student trainer. And if you're like me and you've studied these cases over the years, I actually thought that maybe the NCAA would say, you know what? This student at Notre Dame, he's the one who was involved in the misconduct with former Notre Dame football players. This student kind of, sort of works for Notre Dame because he's part of this student trainer program, but he's not really an institutional staff member. He's not. He's certainly not like a coach. He's certainly not like the secretary or the academic basketball program supervisor at Syracuse. He's not even really like, in my eyes, somebody who is specifically hired by a university to not just deal with athletes, but to deal with athletes in the academic context specifically. There was wiggle room, in my eyes, for the NCAA to say, all right, at Notre Dame, the guy kind of works under the athletic umbrella, but he's a student trainer. That's not really associated with academics at all. I thought the NCAA had wiggle room to, yes, hit Notre Dame with the fine, with the probation, with the public reprimand. But as Notre Dame is arguing in its appeal, I believe it's unprecedented that someone with the job description of student trainer, again, that sounds disassociated with the academic-athletic combination that we typically see with these more severe sanctions. That is the basis of the Notre Dame appeal. We'll see how that works out. But for the time being, there is absolutely no doubt, in my opinion, given my legal background, given 30 years of following NCAA compliance issues, that in the Notre Dame case, the NCAA Committee on Infractions showed a willingness to take sanctions into new and unprecedented territory. Again, that is not good news for defendants. We already know this in the UNC case. The NCAA's charges here are already unprecedented in one sense. They're actually basing some allegations on the premise that such laughably little work was done, such an extremely low level of academic rigor was required. For example, only a single paper, sometimes even in a class that had been described as a meeting regularly lecture class, but turned out to be one of those independent study style, just hand a single paper in at the end and you're fine. In the UNC case, some of those papers were even graded by the secretary rather than the AFAM chair. Sometimes, actually frequently, most of the time, they got unusually high grades on those single papers. And the evidence suggests that sometimes it wasn't even clear whether the secretary even really read those papers while giving out unusually high grades for unusually little work. Keep in mind, as pathetic and disgraceful and embarrassing as the AFAM scandal was at Carolina, everybody, according to the evidence, did hand in something. They got grades for very little work, suspiciously high grades for outrageously little work, but they didn't get grades for doing nothing. And that in itself is a new step for the NCAA. This is not Boeheim's right-hand man handing in stuff for players. This is not the coach knowing of the wrongdoing like in the Minnesota case. There's not even the Notre Dame-style athletic tutor or athletic trainer involved here. The NCAA, not with the Jan Boxel allegations, not with the Julius Niangoro or Deborah Crowder failure to cooperate allegations, perhaps not even with part of the lack of institutional control allegations. The NCAA, in the narrower sense, though, is taking an unprecedented step just with charging the Tar Heels on the premise that laughably little academic rigor was involved in those AFAM classes that were called anomalous because they chose not to use the word fraudulent in the NCAA's revised letter to the University of North Carolina. Will this Committee on Infractions, which in the Notre Dame case just showed, I thought, a somewhat surprising willingness to take sanctions into new and unprecedented territory, will they take these unprecedented in one sense charges against UNC and take the sanctions to places we've never seen before? that can't be something that would make UNC sleep better at night. Again, it's still an educated guessing game. Will they penalize, for example, individual sports like football and men's basketball with specific sanctions on those sports, meaning not just a fine, not just probation, not just some kind of athletic department-wide sanction, but specific penalties to football or to men's basketball? That has never happened in the history of the NCAA when the coach or anyone specifically involved in that program is charged with any of the wrongdoing. This is a university-wide and athletic department-wide allegation about the AFAM scandal. Again, put the women's basketball and Jan Boxall stuff off to the side. There is no precedent for penalizing football or men's basketball specifically when nobody in those programs is accused of anything. If you're willing, in the Notre Dame case, to take sanctions to new and unprecedented territory, that leaves you wondering, in the UNC case, will this Committee on Infractions be willing to take sanctions into new and unprecedented territory like the one that I just described? UNC is going to be fighting, kicking, and screaming, arguing that these shouldn't be new precedents. The NCAA should be more bound by how it has done business in sanctions cases in the past. Well, Notre Dame just argued the same thing. Notre Dame just lost. Notre Dame has appealed. We don't know the outcome of that, but it can't be good news to any defendant. It can't be good news to UNC specifically. Again, the facts of the cases are extremely different. Don't draw too many parallels there. But the general tone, the general backdrop to what UNC is about to go through can't feel any nicer for the Tar Heels when they just saw how the NCAA Committee on Infractions treated the Fighting Irish.
Get updates from David Glenn on Twitter by following @DavidGlennShow.